father come.
And he'll be just all healed up fine before by the time you come downstairs and see him. He's just beginning to wake up now. Mama thought if you picked out a story, Mama will read it to you down here.
And Deborah's, the year that Woody was born, Robin and I were upstairs with a high fever.
And remember your book, A Child's Garden of Verses by Robert Louis Stevenson? This is called The Land of Counterpane. When I was sick and lay abed, I had two pillows at my head, and all my toys beside me lay to keep me happy all the day. And sometimes, for an hour or so, I watched my leaden soldiers go with different uniforms and drills among the bedclothes through the hills. And sometimes sent my ships and fleets all up and down among the sheets, or brought out trees and houses out and planted cities all about. I was a giant great and still that sits upon the pillow hill and sees before him, dale and plain, the pleasant land of counterpane. Hear about a bed, too, and it's called My Bed is a Boat, and it's about someone, a little boy or a little girl who wanted to be a sailor, and he dreams that his bed is a boat that he goes out to.
I might get indigestion, madam, if they are not. Si me dan pasteles, denme los calientes. Que pasteles fríos, empujan a las gentes.
I get up at night and dress by yellow candlelight. In summer, quite the other way, I have to go to bed by day. I have to go to bed and see the birds still hopping on the tree, or hear the grown-up people's feet still going past me in the street. And does it not seem hard to you when all the sky is clear and blue, and I should like so much to play, to have to go to bed by day? About the child alone all by themselves, and what children do and think about, or at least what he thinks children do and think about. Closing your eyes and dreaming, which I guess everybody does sometimes, and it's called The Little Land. When at home alone I sit and am very tired of it, I have just to shut my eyes to go sailing through the skies, to go sailing far away to the pleasant land of play, to the fairy land afar where the little people are, where the clover tops are trees, and the rain pools are the seas, and the leaves like little ships sail about on tiny trips. And above the daisy tree, through the grasses, or high o'erhead the bumblebee hums and passes. In that forest to and fro I can wander, I can go. See the spider and the fly and the ants go marching by, carrying parcels with their feet down the green and grassy street. I can sit in the sorrel, I can in the sorrel sit where the ladybird alit. I can climb the jointed grass and on high see the greater swallows pass in the sky. And around the sun rolling by, heeding no such things as I.
Nu har vi jul igen, och nu har vi jul igen, och julen var liten påska. Nu har vi jul igen, och nu har vi jul igen, och julen var liten påska.
Some are clad in armor green. These have sure to battle been. Some are pied with every hue, black and crimson, gold and blue. Some have wings and swift are gone, but they all look kindly on. When my eyes I once again open and see all things plain, high bare walls, great bare floor, great big knobs on drawer and door, great big people perched on chairs, stitching tucks and mending tears, each a hill that I could climb, and talking nonsense all the time. Oh, dear me, that I could be a sailor on the rainpool sea, a climber in the clover tree, and just come back a sleepyhead late at night to go to bed.
Four.
Well, I guess I'll have to go get old Woody and feed him. Go over here. Come on, Woody. Come on, Woody. He's all curled up in his bed and his feet soaking wet. Wish Robin could see you, Woody, and I wish you could see Robin. He's hungry. Hey, Mama. Hey, Mama. There. Now we'll put your other hand in the shirt, Woody. No, I'm not feeding you yet. Till we get you cleaned up a little bit.
I thought I heard my mama say it's almost day. Oh, chickens crone for midnight, and it's almost day. Chickens crone for midnight, and it's almost day. Now Santa Claus is coming, it's almost day. Santa Claus is coming, well, it's almost day. Chickens crone from midnight, and it's almost day. Chickens crone from midnight, and it's almost day.
Oh. Who's hungry? Huh? Who's hungry? We're gonna put on your older clothes. There's nobody. Robin isn't here to admire you. Robin isn't here to admire you. And then we'll have to eat. We'll have to eat.
A great big stocking on Christmas Day. I want a great big stocking on Christmas Day. Chickens crone from midnight and it's almost day. Chickens crone from midnight and it's almost day. Yes, Christmas is coming, it's almost day. Christmas is coming, it's almost day. Chickens crone from midnight and it's almost day. Chickens crone from midnight and it's almost day.
He said they're about $10 tickets or something.
story of that birth of the Republican Party is quite a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and it hasn't been written as I say this.
To it that almost no one knows about.
I think so.
So you read the Greenbee's book about Anna Carroll, you can't get it.
I'll have to read that. Is there a lot about that in
there? She's responsible.
For the Republican Party?
Exactly. There would not have been any Republican Party. You know, the Abraham Lincoln and American...
She couldn't have been all alone, all by herself.
Well, you know what I mean. She was the leader of the... We're talking about leadership, weren't we? All right. Well, she was one of the greatest leaders in American political history. But in her day, a woman couldn't... You couldn't be a leader. You had to camouflage everything.
What mail did she work through?
She didn't work so many men. She worked through a lot of them. Senator Ben Wade of Ohio, he was one of her lieutenants. And a lot of others.
Ben Wade?
No, not Horace. He was opposition.
Running across in Minnesota history.
There were four parties. Her party was called the Constitutional Anti-Slavery Party or something. She had a candidate named Botts from Richmond, Virginia, that she was plugging for that campaign. Bates and the St. Louis German-Americans, well, that was Greeley's candidate. Seward was the abolitionist's candidate. And Lincoln was the little Republican Party, the embryo, which had come into existence 4 years before.
Is all that told in this book about her?
In Greeley's book, they go into all the details of how that convention was manipulated. And how she got them all to agree on Lincoln. She had to go to the leaders of the abolitionists.
Well, she unified the whole.
Yeah. She had to go to the leaders of the abolitionists and tell them that the St. Louis German Americans were against Lincoln to get the abolitionists to go for him. And then she had to go to German Americans.
You know, you sure love that milk.
Now a conversation that took place when Irene came over to the new place after Woody's birth. Deborah, Irene, and Meredith bathing Woody.
Oh, that face. Oh, look at that face.
Oh, his navel's healed, too. Is that? Mm-hmm.
Is that? Flickering up on your faces.
Yeah, I know. What's going on in the Soviet Union? Have you any idea?
Thank you. I once knew a woman, a very puritanical woman, industry like that.
You realize what a big industry this dye is. Yeah. It's just enormous.
It's terrible, isn't it? Women have to.
Men are doing it too. It's pitiful, really, to see them dyeing their hair because they can't get a job.
Yeah, the same as men.
I waited in line at the point I was looking for a job the last time. I just felt so bad because there's a man there about 50 and he dyed his hair. He said he didn't get a job. And he got the job and then they found out his true age and fired him.
If you sign away your pension, they'll hire you, then they'll hire the older people.
Go ahead.
Everybody. Dad and Nick and Mom and Josh and me, this is Heather, and King and Coyote.
We all send you the greatest love. Out with your coming child. A web of children. A web of people struggling. A web of sky and summer and all our healthy, beautiful children. It's a web of earth.
I was wondering if they could hear your voice in the first.
No. Oh, go on, here. Oh, Deborah will hear it. I'll send it to Deborah, see. Oh, yeah, that's how do you remember Deborah? How do you remember how they look? They were quite different, Rachel and Deborah. Well, I can see you all walking down Third Street, yes.
Yeah.
You know, you used to take a walk down Third.
Oh, I didn't walk them.
Well, how do you remember how they looked, you know?
Oh, well, it's just a little down. It's a little down because it's really just to talk about the first name. That is woman, to the woman. It's to talk to you and say, are these your children?
No. Well, I thought they weren't your children. I knew right away they weren't your children because they don't look like you. You're, well, they're dark and you're light. They don't look anything like you. But I'm so sure that
told me to put those two rest together.
when I give them the tomatoes. Then these tomatoes and these spaghetti not cook too much above this thing. They were baked and put the tomatoes in afterwards with the spaghetti. So we'll have them nice and fresh. But put those children together at the table. Well, when you put those children right together at the table, do you know what? Don't know that they didn't want to eat together or something. Because they tipped the spaghetti right over the hair and the other ones, they put them they tipped it right over the hair. I said, why did sister that, Rachel? Oh, she doesn't want to eat, and she don't want to eat. Yeah. So I said, my goodness, come on, take your best. No, I said, you have to take your best. You look just awful. I said, the best to get down here. What if somebody comes in here? what if your grandpa comes in now and says, all right, we'll be washed. And so I washed them all about the hair and put it for an episode. Yes, afternoon, and we went out for the sunshine, out of the zoo, where they used to have these animals then. After I took them out there to the zoo, you know, down to see them, well, they want the zoo about the animals, live tigers and everything else, so I put them on the swing, you know. And they have about 3 swings there, and they just want to see the swing. And they want the seats very much, too, and then, if they want to see so much, I used to sit and sit 5 hours, and if they like it, you know. So then I put them on the swing, but they care just for nothing very much, but they just watch the animals and the grass and the river, you know, most of all. So I had to just take their hands, each of them, and get out the park somehow, you know, because they like the green coolness. Then we went across the bridge, and just terribly hot to sun. But as we came down lower to the park, it was always cooler and cooler there. The children felt it too, you know. And so we came home afterwards, you know, in the hot sunshine. And thinking all the time, deep thoughts in her orbs, you know, always thinking, dreaming in her thoughts all the time. While Rachel would rather talk, you know, talk to me. Sam talked to me most of the time. And then down to bed, you know. Why, they play and never a sound from each, not a word or sound that you put up to bed. She was about a year old, she was a little different, I don't know, maybe she was a baby.
You can say hello and, you know, just talk right straight to them.
Oh, exactly.
Whatever you'd like to say.
Hello, Robin. Robin, why, I'd like to see you. I wonder how you're looking now, Robin. Take your old house.
9 years old.
9 years old now. My goodness, you must be a birthday girl now. I'm so glad I could talk to you, Robin. Such a long distance like this is. And, is it Deborah?
Uh-huh.
Well, hello, Deborah. How are you getting along? I didn't see you for a long time. I found out that Elmer was coming back here.
Deborah's gonna have a baby in October.
Oh, I thought, look, you're going to have a baby in October, ain't that fine? No wonder you're not around this year. That's just what I thought it was. Well, you know, I can't wait till I see your baby. I just like to find out when you're coming here, your baby.
Do you drive with me out there? There, would you be?
Yes, I drive with Myrtle. I drive out there with Myrtle. I just love to drive with her down to the grocery store once a week and see all the sights. Traffic in the essence of the weather is so hot, you know, that I just enjoy it in the car. It seems to be cool.
If I came in after school started, and so I don't know, but I'd like to hear your ideas on it or when we will see you. If I thought you'd be back here soon, maybe I'd relax about it. But I wish we wrote more often and knew what was going on, and you just kind of wonder. Oh, Leon and Joyce Brown were in town, and came over with their little boy David, who was just about Mark's age, just a little over a year. Very nice old kid, very happy, and he had a good time at our house. She's the baby stayed with her folks, and her mother had a lot of knickknacks, a little bit of. The men sound very fine. They have seen Ben and his wife, and they sound good for him, too. He either had gotten his PhD or was just about to get it. and was very happy, and et cetera. I understand that Bobby has had pneumatic fever and just recently.
So hard to talk to yourself and really feel like you're telling the things that you're thinking or you feel during the day and wonder about. People are asking me how you're doing and everything, and so difficult because I just don't know. Oh, I didn't tell you about Betty Sadie. Like, where's Betty yet? Naomi Ann, she's, looks like the rest of Betty Sadie. Real nice old girl. Mm-hmm. Looking out the window at the lights and the balcony sky. It's, the week we were gone, it was very, very hot. But since we've been back, it's been very humid, but not hot, and, got the kids on it. Well, we're in the pool. I don't know if it's even wet, but it's very humid. It feels hotter than it is. And, well, you know how it is. But it isn't even pretty. The sky is so cloudy, and you hardly see the sun all day. Just clearly a sundown,
so
it came out a little bit for a while.
So, I'm just a little bit. Mother, woman, Rachel. Betty, Renee, and fathers, Ben, and Kenny, and the young mothers and fathers, the little mothers and fathers, and the animals, and the houses, and the hills, and all the living that's taken place. We all send you our dearest love on your birthday, Deborah. We send that love to Robin and to Bernie. And by the way, we don't hear from Bernie about all the news we had in the Christmas recording, which was very good. Web of our own growth and of life. And this web has shown us a wonderful complexity, and the drums of earth beat in us, and the green of the earth rises in us, and we are like giant women and giant men upon the tawny loom. We have woven into ladders for our people, and they are woven into ladders upon which we have raised. We have gained the sky. We travel on the broad sky wing, earth women and earth men, and earth children woven and emitted from the horizon loom. In that green warp and woof, we have woven children in the net, in the great web. The life-giving bowl of rain and season, a vessel for flowers in whom in every cell a seed finds food, shoots green. A field of green children, of new, broad, seminal promise. So with this, we all embrace you and send you the warmest love. And on that Labor Day when you bring forth this new child, we'll all be with you, darling. And we'll all be close to you, all of us swung in the great web of earth, in the great web of our destiny, of the struggle of man and woman upon this earth. Again, we embrace and kiss you, Deborah. And we embrace and kiss you, Robin. And Bernie, we embrace and kiss you. We are all warmly together. And time only increases that warmth. Space only brings us closer. So good day to you all, and good night.
It stated why they were ready to proceed, which Alaska have not. So the delegates that went to Washington gained a lot, and when they came back to Alaska, the wheels were set in motion to call a constitutional convention, which was done last November.
The call, they met?
They met.
Oh, why didn't you write about that? That would have been very...
Yes, it would have. Of course you get...
If you want to send me stuff, I'll type it and rewrite it, or anything you want done with it. Help you organize it, or...
I can send you...
I'm sure you can organize it yourself, as far as that goes.
I can send you stuff that... rough drafts of stuff that you can polish up and maybe make something out of.
Yeah, if you didn't have time to... But Naomi here, she can polish, too.
Oh,
well, Norton has a very good... well, I don't know if you call it more, an article, actually, on statehood that he wrote.
Oh.
And I think it's very good without any polish.
Oh, well, I don't like it. Have you given it to anyone?
I sent it to the PW, but at the time, their form, it was too long for their format.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to take that into consideration.
Yes.
They don't even have forces to rewrite it sometimes.
No, that's it. And I guess they're a little handicapped. Of course, the issues down here were overshadowed at the time, so they may do something with it. However, I will make it a point when I get back home to send it to you. It might be a lot of things of interest to you there.
And you know, there's several, well, we have a lot of farm papers that would be very interested, co-op papers, and really need to know about it.
So,
do you ever see Patton's paper from Iowa, the Farmers Union paper?
I have seen that, yes.
No, he'll be interested in something like that. I would like to, have you got a copy of this with you?
I haven't got it with me, no.
I'll give you my address.
You give me my address, and I will mail it to you. And also other material.
What happened at the Constitutional Convention?
Well, that was pretty interesting. The wheels were set in motion to elect delegates from all over the territory to this Constitutional Convention. And the legislator had already set up a plan of representation from the geographical district. So we proceeded, labor, the Negro people, which we have a population of about 1,800 in Anchorage, and have a large NAACP chapter there, one in Fairbanks and one in Kodiak. So we have three chapters in the territory. So delegates were nominated from NAACP, from Labor, from the Alaska Native Brotherhood, from Chamber of Commerce.
Before I forget it, if you find any material on this Alaskan Native Brotherhood you mentioned last night, and their alliance with the Indian Federation here, I would certainly like to get it.
I can get that.
What they do or how they send delegates. Go ahead.
Quite a campaign was started to on the nomination. Many union men were nominated, many union men.
To the
convention. But this Constitutional Convention had to be elected. They had to be elected from all of these nominees.
Mm-hmm.
The NAACP, like I said before, and the Labor, all nominated, and of course, through the campaign, why the issues had to come out. After all, we had a wonderful opportunity to write a really unique constitution, because we could draw upon the constitutions of all the 48 states. See what we had. That was represented by quite an opportunity. So organized labor, the Negro people and the Native people, all started campaigning, and as a result,
William, the regional NAACP director on the West Coast, come up there and held hearings.
Oh.
And
hearings on what?
On discrimination and so forth.
Oh.
See, and all the delegates, the nominees were invited to these hearings, and they were asked to present their ideas on what they proposed to write in the new constitution regarding the Negro people, regarding discrimination, regarding labor legislation, and so forth. However, the election was held, and no Negroes were elected, and no labor people were elected. That is from the unions, but they came off the close within very few votes. So, but many labor-supported candidates were elected to this constitutional convention, and so following that, they ended up with a representative delegation from all over the territory. Fairly good. I mean, it represented pretty much a cross section of all the people, but not as good as the people wanted,
mm-hmm.
because too many attorneys were elected as writers.
How did that happen? People had to vote, man.
Well, you know how it is in elections, that the one who spends the most money in campaigning seems to get the most votes. In other words, a poor man can't run for the United States Senate or Congress hardly right now.
One of the greatest reads time.
Yeah, that's right. It takes, in other words, the cost of campaigning is going up and up and up.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Alaska is no different in the United States in that respect. Maybe it's little.
Yeah, bit. Foolish question, I admit.
Well, that's about it out anyway. I will add this, that the actual labor representative and the Negro representative and the Native people representative did get a terrific amount of votes. I mean, they were right up there. So
did they make a constitution?
They
make a draft in this?
So now, when I left, they were in session, drafting
the
constitution.
Yeah.
And as right now, I don't know just what they did come out of. But
that's really a wonderful thing.
Yes, it is a surprising. So now, the constitution as proposed, the draft, will be presented to the people again for ratification on a vote. So we have another.
This will be like the Bill of Rights.
That's right, yes. It's,
Well, you really should write something on that. So I think that's really, as you say, it's based upon the 48 states.
That's right. And unless we come up with, we should be able to come up with something that's pretty good. If we don't, why, I don't know. We'll,
you don't deserve to be a state.
No. And we'll also tell us this, that the, or let us know to what extent the vested interests have really taken over,
even in
a territory like Alaska.
You know, I would like to publish a book just on the left-wing constitution in the state struggle.
Mm-hmm.
He was just telling me about Virginia, you know. It's really a terrific story that's little known. And the left-wing constitution wouldn't it be interesting to be published? And every state has had a constitutional struggle. Get, you know, to a left wing and a right wing. Sometimes very, very bitter. Like in Minnesota, they sat for 4 days, the left wing in one room, right wing in the other room, with a completely opposing constitution. One was for the vested interests, one was for the people. Now here in Alaska, they're repeating it all over again.
That's right. I might go back to the issue of statehood again. I think you heard of or the partition plan.
Yeah.
In other words, the sentiments for status were so great that the Republic administration had to present the people with something, or give the people something. In other words, it reminded me of the Edward Bellamy story, the parable of the water tank.
Yeah.
Give the people a drop of water when they need a glass of water. So this partition plan was introduced by McKay, Secretary of Interior, and Governor Heinzelman. Governor that we don't like up there, that was shoved down our throat, so to speak.
That is something.
Yes. Now, this partition plan was a proposal to cut up Alaska, give part of it statehood. The populated areas of white population,
give them statehood,
or part of the populated areas.
But not the famine net.
And leave the... the whole native population, which is a terrific voting power there, and usually votes against the vested interest and for labor and so forth.
What a book you could write on the native population.
Oh, yeah.
Just on their struggle, I think you'd be
In other words, that was presented. And we heard a lot of belly blew on it. It was headlined in all the papers.
When was
even
this?
This was...
after Roosevelt?
After the Republicans got elected.
Oh.
52. But we made such a protest on that we shoved it in the background. We wanted all of Alaska to be statehood or nothing. So if you heard about the partition plan, that's about what it is.
I didn't hear in detail. Well, that's a vicious plan to disassociate the native population.
That's right.
Population.
Yeah, split us up. The native population. And keep the area where the Kansas Indians had most of its properties out of a state where we could start taxing them. Another thing on the native population, many missionaries went up there among the population and many Catholics. And here's my idea on that. The Eskimos, they earn a living by hunting and fishing, and they go from hand to mouth. I mean, they hunt today what they eat today, so forth. And they do a little carving, which they sell. And do a little trapping, which they also sell and get a little bit of money on that. But these missionaries come up there and set up little chapels and tents and so forth. And they really took their time away from them, so to speak. In other words, they taught them how to shoot straighter, and how to preserve what they shot, or it would have been more beneficial to them, instead of dragging them off to a chapel where they sit in there for a few hours at a time and listen to a sermon. I mean, that's the feeling of some of the natives themselves, too. So the missionaries have not helped them any at all. They've, in other words, they've kept them away from them.
I suppose they're against their organization, organizing and starving for
that. That's right. In other words, the Alaska Native Brotherhood could have been a more progressive and a more militant organization had it been for the missionaries. Mm-hmm. That's a fun idea. Now,
do they have any outstanding leaders in that brotherhood?
Not outstanding, no. No, I can't say that they do.
Do the women take part in any of these struggles?
You see,
the women work in the canneries, I suppose.
That's right.
A lot of them. Cheap labor. That'd be a good project for you to write a book about the women.
Well, it would be all right. I can never work in a fish tannery to get a story.
Well, you can go see them, you know.
go out among them.
Do you still work in the land?
No, I was just on a temporary excursion. But the native women that aren't in the fish canneries would make a very interesting story. You know, how their family life.
Yeah.
How is this? I think.
Yes, I think that. I think if you just start writing, you know, get a lot of material out, notes every day, what you already know, and then going out and contacting somebody. Get a lot of material, then you can, you know, talk about putting it together.
Yeah.
You know, you got to mine it out first.
Well,
and then
I think something that should be also brought out is the terrific TB disease among the natives.
Exactly.
They're building hospitals. The government has expanded quite a few millions of dollars in building hospitals, but it's not near enough.
Is this for malnutrition or bad living conditions?
Bad living conditions.
The climate.
And, of course, they did not get the TB germ until the white man came there.
Mm-hmm.
Introduced them to liquor.
Syphilis and TB go along
the
way.
Yeah, it seems that way. I don't know enough about it to really know the reason why, but anyway, everybody seems to connect that to.
When you say that
Naples
and I did you say
it's the Renaissance too? Right in
Anchorage we're built. Is that just the TB?
Yeah.
No, but
just for natives.
Any native disease or accident, but no other white or anything.
Oh,
you mean they
segregate
them?
Well,
yes, the native
in that respect, they have it all over the white because we have one hospital in Anchorage. It's controlled by the Catholic Church, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And the prices are.
They're outrageous.
Outrageous.
Oh, and that's the only place where you can go.
That's right.
Yeah.
Except
the native. Well, of course, the military.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt. But for people like us, you either go to the Catholic maintained hospital or else you don't go.
Hmm.
The natives, they're protected there, I think, better than on any other store. And they're, you know, once they get sick.
Is that the United States government?
Yes. That's the Alaska Native, operated under the auspices of the Alaska Native Service. And
we have a very humane government. Even in Guatemala, they have wonderful hospitals. You know, after you've exploited them.
That's right.
They have, somebody was telling me about Guatemala, how wonderful it was. They had this marvelous hospital.
The sad part of it is the natives can't get the hospital in time.
Oh,
They could expand. You see, there again, they get a drop of water when they need a glass of water.
Yeah.
In other words, it's a fine hospital, but they need, instead of one hospital, they need 10 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think there's probably less native population in and around Anchorage than there is any town, isn't there?
Of course.
There's the hospital
that's located.
Yeah.
Instead of having it down in Juneau or Sitka, especially where the natives are.
Oh, yeah, I'd like to come up from that country. I can't imagine it.
Oh, it's
3,600 miles.
Alaska's is a great country, right?
You intend to make your whole life then?
That's not definite, no. As a worker, why you have to go places where you can make a living. If I'm able to make a living up there, why naturally the person has to move.
Yeah.
But
then if you feel a deep relationship with the place, sometimes
yeah, the longer you live there, why the better you like it, and you get to.
You've been there a long time now, since 39 or 40.
38, off and on since 38.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to live there?
Well, if we lived where we where our home is now, like, we're close to a very good school, and close to a good shopping district.
Where do you live, in Anchorage?
Yes, it's a little suburb of Anchorage, yes, Bernard. And I met you while I was.
But I don't. I would want to live in any other town besides Anchorage.
Will you fall out in the wilderness then, when you're in?
Not exactly.
Well, no, I feel like you do.
I don't know if there's anything else that I can. As far as the labor movement.
You could write an article just on this.
I don't realize it, but I suppose a writer would.
Well, you're familiar. Here's my address in Minneapolis. So I hope you'll both.
I'm very happy about Russia.
Try it again about John Reed. And
here's what happened. Well, we lived, Jim and I lived in Milligan Place, and not, as Gurley says, in a little one room. We had three rooms, as she's very wrong, and we had a fireplace in one end of it, too.
You're lying.
The building dated back to the days of the Revolution. I don't know, maybe Tom Paine lived in it at one time or another, but it was a pretty good thing. A railroad flat, they called it. Three rooms, one after another. You go in the backyard, then there's a fence, and on the other side of the fence, another backyard, and there is Patchen Place. And on the top floor in Patchen Place lived John Reed and Louise Bryant. So we had a board out of the fence so we could go through easy, and back and forth was we all lived together. They lived in Patchen Place, and we lived down Milligan. So when John came back with his manuscript of 10 Days That Shook the World, the first, I think he got in the evening, and that night, the next morning, he was down having a tea. Jim always had tea for breakfast, you know, so I had to have tea for breakfast while Jim was around. We always had a pot.
He was
tea.
A big fellow.
Oh, 64 or 5 or something.
Whoa.
Terrific character. And so John came in with his manuscript, and we sat down. He told us everything. We started talking then, and we talked for about 2 or 3 days, most of the time, see, between he'd have to run uptown, see this one, run over, see somebody else. But he always came back, and we always came down to the sessions were held down in our place in Milligan. It was easier than climbing up the stairs to his place than Patchen Place. So. That's why I, from the beginning, that people used to go over there in groups, you know, in committees and delegations, and I said, no, my job is right here. The best thing we can do for Russia is to build a good movement on this continent as fast as we can, and do our share to try to catch up with them. We're way miles behind. It's all wrong according to the, what's his name, the priest that's on the air,
Sheehan.
Fulton J. Sheehan. He says, Marx was wrong about Russia. And that's a big argument. He makes a big point out of the fact Marx was wrong about Russia. Well, Marx didn't say that they wouldn't have a revolution in Russia or Patagonia or any other place. He indicated that capitalist development, if you work logically from one thing to another, it would seem that in the most highly developed industrial nations, that the working class there ought to get intelligent enough to do something about it first, and that the less industrial nations might take a longer time.
What did Jim Larkin think?
They just bypassed that in Russia, like we bypassed things when we started this move toward democracy in the American Revolution. We bypassed a lot of feudalism.
Talked to you 2 or 3 days about...
Jim, of course, we went to work then. Everybody was started to work then on the left wing of the Socialist Party. I rejoined the party. I put my application in, so I hadn't had anything to do with the socialist parties from the time they threw me out in the Bridgeport fight in 1912. But now I went back into the 3rd, 5th, and 10th Assembly District, where there was a whole bunch of us all in there in the same as the district. It was the district that included Greenwich Village, and Eastman was in there.
Continue about John Reed telling you that.
John then was, besides what he wrote in the book, that's why I say we read the manuscript, but we got many, many times more information about the whole situation in Russia than was in the book, because they're the sort of things that you tell in between, what you write down, and a little stuff about how his impression of how the people were
managing. Were you at the meeting
managing.
In Carnegie Hall when he told about Russia?
It was at all the early meetings. I was there all the time, unless I was out of town myself.
You remember, it was one of the first meetings about the Soviet Union in Carnegie Hall. It was packed.
Most of the meetings that I...